Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guests this morning are Melinda Marciano and her mother, Lee. Melinda is a cancer survivor who recently wrote a book titled Grace, A Child's Intimate Journey Through Cancer and Recovery. In 2007, at 13 years old, she began feeling ill and was diagnosed with Hodgkin lymphoma. Today at 15, she is cancer-free. Her new book recently won an International Book Award. Melinda Lee and I will be discussing their intimate mother-daughter journey that tested their faith while strengthening their love for each other. Good morning, ladies, and welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be with you this morning, Johnny.
Wonderful. I'm so glad to have you guys on this morning. Melinda, I really enjoyed reading your book. I'm totally impressed. Totally impressed with what you write. And you're a natural writer. I feel like reading the book really brought me into it, in the sense of experiencing the things that you go through and kind of really connected with you as a person. So I really like that. Truly a natural writer. So for that, you did a wonderful job. Let us begin by having you to talk a little bit about yourself. Lee, please walk us through your life's journey from childhood to the present moment, please.
Okay. I've been walking around for a little while on this earth, so I'll just hit the bullet points for you, Johnny. I was born and raised in New England. I was born in Massachusetts, so I grew up with seasons and making snowmen and enjoying the beautiful fall leaves in the fall and raking them into big piles and jumping in them. So I had a very wonderful childhood. When I was 12, my dad was transferred to California. So I lived there for a while, and we lived in Claremont. And then for college, I went to UC Irvine. That's where I met Melinda's dad. And we have two other sons besides Melinda. Nicholas is 20, and Dean is 18. Had to think about that. And we moved to Napomo 20 years ago, and we homeschooled. I've homeschooled all three of our children, and that brings us to now.
Fantastic. Is there a reason why, that's a big switch now. I mean, growing up in the East Coast, and then you went basically all the way across country to the West Coast, and obviously, do you still have, I guess, families back in the, on the East Coast?
I would love to get back there to see them. I miss them. I look forward to that soon.
Well, we do live in a sort of a global community now, so it's very easy to communicate with everyone. So that's fantastic. Melinda, please describe your life with your family, growing up with your brothers, and obviously you're the youngest. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, and like my mom said, I have two older brothers, and we were homeschooled, so it really allowed for us to be really creative and for me to write, and me and my brothers would write stories. We would make movies. We loved playing with stuffed animals and making stores, and we would mow a baseball field into our lawn and have little stuffed animal baseball games. And we would dig cardboard boxes out of the trash, and we would make houses and tanks and cars. And so it was just, we had a big yard, and we just played constantly. So it was a really carefree, wonderful childhood.
That's interesting. You know, I don't know if I want to be homeschooled, because I think my mom would be really tough on me. In school, I guess I could get away with things. And so, but as a child, I guess y'all don't have much of a choice to debate on that or make contribute in the decision making process, I presume.
Yes.
It was kind of a unanimous decision of the whole family.
It was, Johnny. Each year we would talk about it, and they would decide. And each year they would say that they wanted to homeschool. So that's what we would do.
How is that in terms of the children integrating with, I guess, students and fellow boys and girls of the same age? I mean, being homeschooled, obviously you don't have that sort of integration. How is that How do you solve that kind of issue?
That's a very common question about homeschoolingism, what people ask about socialization. And what I tell them is that it seems to me that there's a lot more opportunity for children to interact with the greater world outside of the classroom. So not just with peers their age, but through sports and dance and other things, but also with adults, because we did a lot of adventure-type things where they would interact with adults.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have something else to add, Melinda?
It was just a great experience, and people think that I would be a shy little person who doesn't know how to be social, I guess. But I feel like it's taught me a lot of things that going to school wouldn't have taught me.
I see. Well, you got to be careful, too, now, because if not, the homework will double tomorrow, so watch what you say. Well, Melinda, anyway, when did you first start to feel that there was something wrong with you?
This was early in 2007, and I can't really pinpoint exactly when or the day or any time like that, but gradually I began to become more and more short of breath and more tired, definite fatigue, and that really transferred over into just a general, like, eerie feeling. And it's that feeling where you know something, somewhere deep inside you know something's very wrong with you, but you don't know what it is.
And something obviously very unusual then, not just the normal, you know, we all get sick or we don't feel good, but you saying that this is something very different that you sort of like, huh, it's just, it's sort of like it sets up a different alert system.
Yes, you can't put your finger on it, and that's the scary part. And another thing I had was I had what we called the dolphin cough, and it was this high-pitched wheezing cough. And it was very unusual, and we had to figure out what it was, and that was a very difficult challenge.
I understand. I didn't know dolphin coughs because until I read your book, which is kind of interesting. But Lee, as a mother, how was how was it different this time versus any other time when, you know, she came to you and talked to you about, hey, Mom, I'm not feeling well. What sort of a reaction you have this particular time, which is, I guess, a little bit different because obviously you took it further than just like an ordinary, say, complaint, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. It there were just symptoms that had some mysterious root, and Melinda and I knew we had to find the root so we could yank it out, or she would keep being not feeling well. And each time when there would be a new diagnosis, like, oh, it's anemia, we'd say, oh, boy, great, it's easy to find, we can fix this, this is great. And each time when we hoped that that was what it was, I think Melinda and I, both of us, we knew somewhere inside of us that wasn't what it was, and that's what kept us looking. And I'm sure that that was because of our faith in God, and God gave us wisdom where we really needed it.
Well, in your case, how did you manage yourself upon knowing the result of the second biopsy? I'm sure it's got to be devastating to go through and being told that your daughter has cancer.
Yes, it's. And speaking of faith, Johnny, yes, it's totally devastating. And at that moment where you just don't know what you can do, it's paralyzing. And seriously, I so many moments I just gave everything to God because it would be way too overwhelming. And then God would give us peace. And but at the same time, I was relieved to know what it was because then we knew what we had to fight. At the same time, I was horrified at what I knew she would have to go through.
Right.
And at the same time, I was confident that Dr. Dan, her doctor, is an amazing doctor, and everybody at Cottage Hospital is great. So I had total confidence that they could heal her.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I was devastated at what she would have to go through for her.
I understand. Well, Melinda, how important is it for you to have your mom, I guess, not necessarily that she's never believed you before or that you have played games with her, you know, as a child, but how important were you to really connect with her, making her understand that she believes you, that there's really something wrong with you?
It's extremely important. We've always been very, very close, and I knew that she was the one person who would believe me and who I could trust with symptoms that I didn't understand or things that scared me. I knew I could tell her anything, and that trust really, really was important and special. And at some point, she was the only one who believed that I was sick, and I think my worst fear was that no one would believe me, and I had to just battle everything alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a period of like 3 months, Johnny, where we didn't know what it was, and every night she would cry, and we would sit together, we would pray together, and I would just tell her, we're not going to stop until we find out what it is.
Right.
Not meant the world to me.
I'm sure it is. I think it would be different. I remember growing up when I have a cut on my finger, so to speak, and I would tell my mom, and of course this is in a joking way, it was kind of interesting because we all have different things, and she's obviously been very serious about when I get ill, too. But I remember when, the flip side, the funny side of things is like I would show her like a little cut or a little boo-boo, so to speak, or whatever you want to call it, on your finger, and like she would say, oh, wait a minute, that's so far away from your heart, don't worry about it, Okay, it's okay. It's like, wait a minute now, blood, I'm bleeding here. So it's just a little bit different approach. But, I mean, I'm sure we have those times, too. But
everything goes into context there.
There you go. And that's why I said, let me see it. And she made the right diagnosis as far as that goes, And, of course, I just wanted some TLC, that's all.
Sometimes
you share?
We need that medicine more than anything.
There you go. Lee, please share with us some of the statistics regarding children's Hodgkin's lymphoma, because I know you did a lot of work with it in terms of trying to find out a little bit more about it, and I didn't even realize about this until I read the book, but please share with us what you found out.
Okay, it is one of the more rare cancers. Hodgkin's disease accounts for 5% of cancers diagnosed in children who are less than 15 in the United States. It's more frequent in boys than in girls, except for girls between 15 and 19 years of age. It's more common in girls. And the causes are unknown, but studies are investigating possible factors of maybe viruses or bacteria, genetics and environment, or immune system deficiencies. So,
Right, but one of the things that I encountered in reading the book is that I knew your husband was concerned about the fact that maybe it's genetic. You all have a history of that in a family, so to speak, and so
no,
it was
there is,
not really.
There is no, there's not, and there's really nothing in studies that points definitely to what the cause is.
Well, Melinda, at 13, then, how did you react to finding out about this and the forthcoming treatments?
Well, upon the initial diagnosis, I felt relief because, like I said, it was very scary not knowing what it was. And right at first, when we knew when it was total relief, but then kind of the shock and the numbness and all the emotions came after that because I realized, oh, okay, now I need to get rid of it. now I need to work, and it's going to be hard. And the treatment was a scary thing for me. It was kind of like, okay, here we go, type of thing.
Well, it sounds scary. Reading your book, I mean, it sounds scary to me. I mean, it's almost like this little blob that you were talking about in your chest. And I'm reminded of, I love Spider-Man, and of course, Spider-Man 3 had that little black blob that overcame him, and I'm visualizing, and of course it's not even close to how you feel, but it's something that you can't get rid of, or very difficult, that overwhelms you, so to speak. But you seem to find a lot of strength from within, and in your book you did write about such strength, I could do all things through Christ who strengthened me. At what point in your life did you decide to recruit God as to be on your side, so to speak?
Well, I was introduced to God at a very, very young age. I was baptized when I was just a baby. And I've always loved God, and He's always loved me. And I even loved God when I didn't truly understand what God was and who God was.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was little, church used to make me cry, and my mom used to sing me hymns, and they used to make me cry, but my mom said that it was happy tears, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it's really in my darkest moments there, I was grasping for any hope, and naturally I just turned to God for mm-hmm. that hope and strength, and he gave it to me.
Now, Lee, as a mother, how did you comfort Melinda during these challenging times?
Well, I think there are moments where there aren't any words, and the best communication is a hug or a look or maybe just crying together. And we had many, many of these moments, and there are moments even where we would be hysterically laughing one moment and the next minute
yeah.
crying, or crying one minute and then laughing. So it was just sharing all those emotions together, and usually it did not come with words.
It's true. It's very, very true. I mean, upon finding everything out, and how did you guys go through the treatment together in terms of what did y'all do things differently, say, than the routine that y'all have been doing that sort of helped to ease the difficulties at hand?
And Melinda, would you like to tell about Antonio?
Antonio? Well, Antonio is my stuffed gorilla.
Uh-huh.
And during my radiation treatments, I would dress him up, and I would bring him to the cancer center each day dressed as something different
yeah.
and spreading a little happiness. And so it was just those things where life kind of slows down, and
right.
you just do things totally out of the box for comfort, to make others feel wonderful, and it really puts life in perspective.
Very interesting. Well, tell us about the Carrie Bear story then.
Speaking of Antonio, or stuffed animals,
yeah.
Well, I'm going to start with the day before, and this
mm-hmm.
was probably, I'm thinking about it, but probably the worst day of my life, one of them at least,
mm-hmm.
and I was being rolled into the pediatric intensive care unit to get a surgery, to get a PICC line inserted, and a bone marrow aspiration to see if the cancer had spread into my marrow. And they were trying to decide between two types of anesthesia, and they chose one. They gave it to me, and anyways, to make a long story short, it ended up giving me anesthesia awareness, and I woke up during my own surgery. And going back to the last question, that's definitely when I recruited
mm-hmm.
God, and that was horrible, horrible,
mm-hmm.
and really my book does the best job of describing that time. And I woke up from all that, and I looked over, and my brother was there, and I saw him sliding down the wall, and he passed out. So that was a topper. And then
mm-hmm.
Right after that, we went up, and my doctor got us into a little room, and he gave us the chemo talk, quote, chemo talk.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he told us that my heart could fail, my kidneys could fail. He's telling
mm-hmm.
us
mm-hmm.
all the possible side effects, just because he's a good doctor and he has to. And so I was sitting there still groggy from my anesthesia and my surgery and listening to about how my heart could fail.
Right.
It was very difficult. And after that, I went straight back to my room and I started getting my first chemo. And that was the moment where it was like, wow, okay, I'm getting chemo. I'll never be the same. And it was just a why me moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the side effects from the chemo started to hit me, and I had really, really bad stomach pains, nausea. My medication for nausea was not working.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I want to share with you, during that time when I was having those stomach pains, my mom crawled into bed with me, and she hugged me, and
mm-hmm.
I just wanted to share that with you because that was awesome. And then, so I finally got some new medication, and it worked, and I went to sleep. I woke up the next morning, and I was staring at this huge white teddy bear, and I was wondering where it came from, so I asked my mom, and she said that a Teddy Bear Cancer Foundation volunteer man, he had walked into my room with this huge sack of teddy bears, and he had looked at the bag of chemo and looked at me, and then he reached into his bag and he pulled out just the biggest, most huggable, just wonderful bear, and he placed it next to me, and he said, I think you need this one. And that story just touched me, and it made me realize that just a little act of kindness can just make a big impact on someone, because I'll never forget that. That teddy bear was hope to me that day, and
right.
It really meant the world to me.
What I got from it, too, was very interesting, because you did write about the fact that there are so many people that care. And you guys obviously have never heard of that person's foundation before. And so to realize that there are a whole lot of people out there that always standing with you and helping you to overcome whatever you have to overcome, and that's quite fascinating. And of course, besides that, you know, your brother Dan was trying to outstage you by fainting. So,
yeah.
I'm glad I'm not living in California, because he might be coming after me or something, you know, toilet paper my house. But so when I read that, I said, oh, wait a minute now, you know, this guy's trying to get, you know, to be in the picture here. So, but anyway, I'm kidding. If he's listening, Dan, I am kidding. I just want to let you know that.
I have to tell you, Johnny, it was so wonderful for us to find out that there are places like the Teddy Bear Cancer Foundation. I just can't believe what they do. They help with people pay their rents, because a lot of times, well, all the time, when a child with cancer is in the hospital, a parent needs and wants to be with that child, and
right.
There goes half of their income, and how do they pay their bills? They're already emotionally devastated, and then they have financial devastation on top of that. And
right.
Places like Alexa Foundation and Teddy Bear Cancer Foundation, they help families to pay their utilities, their rent, so that they can give their time to their child. And I can't tell you, those organizations, they just touch my heart so deeply.
Very interesting, and what to me gets to me is that you have so many of these organizations that are not really recognized. They operate underneath the radar, so to speak, and as you had mentioned, you found out afterwards, after the fact, but it's good, and I'm glad you are talking about it, because, and you are doing a lot of things with them, and I'm very glad to know that. Lee, how did you find strength within yourself, for yourself, and for the rest of the family during this time of difficulty and uncertainty?
Well, I'm really blessed with my parents are just the best, just great, great, wonderful parents, and, you know, family and friends and God, and it takes everyone working together, it really does, and just, and then also Melinda's whole medical team, it takes everyone working together and everyone staying entirely positive. And we're so blessed to have just many people, and they were like God's hands and heart here on earth for us. We're just truly blessed.
Very interesting. How has that changed in terms of the relationship within the family itself, with your husband and your two other sons and so forth? How are they able to, I guess, to compliment you with what you're going through, because it is your baby that's going through all this?
Yes. Well, you know, there were times where it was just too painful for the rest of the family to see Melinda in her suffering. So, you know, everyone has to deal with it in their own way, and sometimes it just is way too painful, and the best thing is to just, you know, try to deal with your own pain sometimes. And when Melinda was going through her eating disorder, it was emotionally painful every moment of every day, and it was really too much for most of us in the family.
Melinda, in your book, you wrote about Anne Frank's, I don't think of all the misery, but of all the beauty that still remains. Please share with us your thoughts regarding this at that time.
I think this is a beautiful quote, and that's why I chose to include it in the book. I love it, and when I think about it, it was such a difficult time, and really to sit back and to take in all of the difficulty, all of the negative energy, it was just too much and too overwhelming, and that wouldn't help me fight the cancer and battle cancer. And really, I can't stress enough the importance of being positive in your fight and having positive energy and love and hope. And in Anne Frank's quote, it talks about the beauty, and I see that beauty as the flashes of hope, I'll call it. And it's those little beautiful moments that really kept me going and telling me I can do this and I can keep fighting and I'm going to heal and I'm going to be okay one day.
Interesting. Lee, what was it like to see Melinda go through the hard times and, of course, being a parent and the actions you have to take and so forth for yourself? Now, this obviously changes the dynamics. I know you talk about your faith and the support that you have from your parents and the rest of the family. But from a perspective of a mother and yourself personally as a woman, what was your inner thoughts in terms of, like, how do you cope up with those things every day?
Well, gosh. I know that one of the things I really needed to do was to communicate with Melinda every day and to really ask her and to just to have her talk to me. I mean, especially if there's somebody who's listening who's battling an eating disorder, I just really, really, I hope that you have somebody who you can just talk to for hours a day, because that's what it takes. There's just so many thoughts rattling around up there, and they need to come out and have somebody who really, really, truly cares listen. So I listened a lot. I did a lot of listening, and that was, I can think, the way that I needed to show my love for Melinda a lot of times.
So what is interesting is that your approach from the motherhood perspective changes. You were very fluid because you went with the situation. And as you listen, so it changes your style, so to speak, that that may have been different from the perspective of the fact that before you were a little bit maybe different. I'm not saying better or worse, it's just different. And now you find yourself to be able to be very fluid and accommodate the situation, correct?
Yeah, you know, I think that when someone's sick, we want to just go, oh, well, do this, do that, do this, and you'll be better.
Right,
but
right.
To the person who's sick, that doesn't work. You think that you need to tell them how to fix it in order to help them, but really in many situations, what I needed to do to help her was just to listen.
To be there. So
yeah,
it's just very, very,
yeah,
right.
Just
so it's a very different.
Physically, just sitting there, yeah.
Very interesting. Melinda, tell us about the Beats of Courage. What did that do for you?
Well, the Beads of Courage, it's a program where you get beads, and the beads represent procedures and pokes and days of chemo and days in the hospital, etc. And it really gave me a sense of accomplishment. I have two whole necklaces now, and one's just for pokes, over 150 pokes. Mm-hmm. And even when I knew I had to get a bag of chemo or I had to get a surgery, I knew, hey, I get a bead for this. So, you know, there was a little positive side to it. And now it's amazing to look back and to see what I've gone through. And it reminds me really of the inner strength that I had and lets me know that, hey, I can do anything. Look, I did all this. So,
yeah. It's a wonderful program because it helps kids to realize that each step that they take in their treatment is a step towards getting better, and that's a positive thing.
Very, it's, they obviously are very organized in terms of what they're doing and encouraging the patient and everything else. I want to sidetrack you a little bit. So you are a Rubik's Cube master, correct? Because I need some help.
Actually, recently I just picked up the Rubik's Cube again, and I was like, dang, what are the moves again? I was definitely on chemo at that time, so I don't remember things, but I'm sure I'll get back in the groove someday.
See, I got to know that because I got to impress my friends that I could do the Rubik's Cube, you know, X number of minutes here. So you got to figure that out and email me the moves so that
I will.
So I could hang with them, you know, and just say, hey, I'm pretty good at this kind of stuff. So I just
can amaze
I got
friends.
That's right. I have to impress on something like that. Please tell us about Rowan. I thought that was a cute story.
Rowan.
About Yes.
Yes, I love Rowan. Rowan's a therapy dog, and she's the dog, or the daughter, I guess you could say, of my buddy Janie, who's a child life specialist at Cottage Hospital. And me and Janie are really, really good buddies. We had a lot of fun in the hospital together, and Rowan's her dog. And Rowan visited me during my third round of chemo, and she's 122 pounds. And she's just a big ball of love and slobber.
She's huge.
And she hopped up on my bed, and she just laid there for a while, and then I pet her, and it was just a calmness and a peace. And dogs, they give you so much unconditional love, and they give it, and they don't expect anything in return, and they just give it because they want to just lick you on the face. And I personally love dogs, maybe a little too much sometimes, but I love dogs, and that was really awesome to have Rowan come visit me.
One thing I at that point in your book, what I realized up to that point when I was reading your book is that there were a lot of laughter, a lot of happy moments in the way of what the staff and say the whole situation is to create a laughing and good feeling among all of you. And I think that's very, very important, because I've read somewhere about how you can laugh your way to healing yourself. Do you feel that?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. It's a moment where when you're laughing, you forget about the bag of chemo draining into you, or that you have a transfusion in 2 days, or, you know, it's just...
Right.
It's perfect at that moment. It's a beautiful thing.
Wonderful. Now, your dad had a problem with you losing your hair, correct?
Yes. It was very funny because you would expect probably the females in the family to be the most horrified, but they were actually the most okay with it. And it was my grandpa and... A lot of males in my family were kind of shocked about my hair coming out, and I kind of thought it was entertaining and funny.
Well, at what point during your recovery did you decide to write the book?
It was February 2009 that I began writing it, and I was still very sick with my eating disorder at that time, and it was a healing thing for me to write. And to go back, and while you're going through it, you don't realize all the emotions you're having, and those all come out afterwards. And to go back and to go through everything and think about everything, I was able to put it in context of where it fit in with my life, and just kind of put it in its place and close the chapter on that, no pun intended. But it was a really healing thing for me, and I've always loved to write. And it was just something that made me feel like I was being productive, and it was healing, and that transformed into wanting to help other people heal gradually as I got better, and I wanted to share it more and more and be able to help not only me but others.
You did the right thing in terms of putting everything down, and like, I think the biggest thing you mentioned just now was that's your form of therapy, because as you put it down on paper, you're sort of getting it all out of your system, so to speak, and being away from you. Very, very interesting way you approach this. Well, Lee, what kind of role did you play in putting this project together?
Well, Melinda wrote, when she wrote started writing her book, she put it in spiral notebooks, and that's where she wrote all of the words to her book. So she had maybe six spiral notebooks, or seven or eight, or I don't know how many, with her written words, and she had read a lot of it to me, most of it, along the way, and I knew what she had in those notebooks, and so I started typing it, and over 90,000 words later, there was a book.
Very interesting.
And a very grateful daughter.
Very, very, well, you know, you didn't use one of those, the old-fashioned typewriter, did you? I mean.
Oh, gosh, no.
Thank goodness. Make one mistake, you go back.
No. I don't know if I could have done that.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you know, it's like, well, honey, good, thank you, but perhaps we'll print it in 10 years from now or something like that, you know.
Yes.
You type it yourself. But how does that bring you guys together in terms of all of a sudden right now you're working on a project. So how does that work? How does that dynamics work?
It's just awesome to be able to both, we both have our heart in the same place and we both mm-hmm. want to do the same thing with the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so thankful that my mom believes in my book and she helped me. She came in on the project with me. And to be able to work on something together where we both have the same goal and the same outlook on it, it's just a really awesome thing, as being a mother and daughter, to just help our relationship grow.
How about you, Lee? I mean, why is the book so important to you?
The book is Melinda's heart. Melinda poured her heart into her. I mean, it's like her heart came out in words in the book. Mm-hmm. And I know it took so much love and help in order for her to heal. And the way Melinda is, it's difficult for her to be on the receiving end of love, but she mm-hmm. realized during her illness she needed to be. And that her goal is to just have a big circle of love. And so the book is her love and her gratefulness, her gratitude being poured out so that it can help other people. And it's just like a big circle of love, and that's Melinda's quote. She just wants everything in the world to be a big circle of love.
And obviously, you guys self-publish it with Happy Quail, which is, by the way, that's one of your nicknames, correct?
Quail is one of my nicknames,
yeah.
And I always seem to be happy, so Happy Quail.
Well, I mean, it can be Unhappy Quail, and so Happy Quail, I thought was really
exactly,
cute.
Exactly, yeah.
And we're just so grateful for our Greenleaf Book Group, and they've been incredible in making the second edition. They've been amazing to work with. They just made a beautiful cover for the book, and we're just Melinda wants to say something else.
And I just wanted to say the second edition coming out with Greenleaf, there's going to be over 60 pictures and a foreword written by Dr. Josh Schiffman, who he was my substitute doctor for my fourth round of chemo while my Dr. Dan was away on vacation, and he wrote a beautiful foreword. So we're really excited about the second edition.
Wonderful. Tell us about your port moment with Lance Armstrong.
I like that name, port moment. Well, this was the solving time trials for the tour of California,
mm-hmm.
and Lance was riding in it, and just some... Recently, right before that, I'd gotten my port taken out,
mm-hmm.
and cancer patients know what I'm talking about when I say port.
Okay. Tell us what it is for everybody else. What is that?
It's a semi-permanent IV. It's basically, if you picture a little golf ball, maybe a little smaller than that, but it's mm-hmm. implanted in your chest, and it has a line running to a major artery near your heart, so... They access your port, is what they call it, and they stick a needle. Basically, they feel around for your port. It's underneath your skin, so then they poke it, and
mm-hmm.
then they could give medicine to you, whatever, and it can get around your body very quickly. So
mm-hmm.
that's what a port is.
So it's like Iron Man then, right? It's like Iron Man that has the little thing right in front of his chest.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I had just gotten that taken out, and I had read that Lance Armstrong, I had read his book, and he
mm-hmm.
got his port put in a jar when he got it taken out. And so, of course, little me, I wanted my port in a jar just like Lance.
Okay.
And so I asked my surgeon, and he cleaned it up nice and good for me, which was helpful. And he put it in a jar. And so we went off to the solving time trials, and I brought my port. And we were kind of half-joking, oh, I'm going to get Lance to sign my port for me, my port jar.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked around for a pretty long time, and then finally we found his camp.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this big crowd around the camp, and he was warming up, and we were kind of right in the middle, all squashed.
Mm-hmm.
But then he went to go ride for his time trial, and the whole crowd went with him, and
mm-hmm.
me and my mom stayed, and we went up to the front.
Right.
Pretty smart cookies.
mm-hmm.
And so we waited there for him to come back, and then the crowd came in all around us, and we were right up front,
mm-hmm.
and there was a big TV camera to my left, and he came around to sign autographs. And then he stopped for an interview right in front of me. And I held up my port jar, and during the whole interview, he kept on glancing over at my port jar and kind of like, what's that? So that was really funny. And right after his interview, he came over and he goes, what's this? And I go, I put my port in a jar just like you did. And then he kind of chuckled, and he took my my port jar and he signed it, and then he was on his way. But it's kind of ironic. Now, just recently for my second edition of Grace, he endorsed it. We just got an endorsement in from him, and it's a beautiful endorsement and kind of ironic and definitely awesome.
Fantastic. I'm really glad to hear the story. I thought it was a wonderful story, the way this whole thing happened, and it certainly will inspire others about how things evolve over the period of time.
Yes,
if you
that is an interesting... Yes.
Yeah, so that was very, very interesting. And what have you guys learned from going through this journey? Lee, how about you? I mean, what have you learned from this whole thing?
Oh, my gosh, what haven't I learned? Gosh. I think if I had to put it in a nutshell, I think that I've learned that... life needs to be a lot simpler, and that it is simple, and that it just needs to be about love. And it, really everything else is is secondary.
And how about you, Melinda?
I'm kind of right in the boat with my mom. We get way caught up with all of the things in life, and we get stressed out about things that are, just seem so tiny when you're going through cancer, and you stop and you think about people getting stressed about work or whatever, and really in the great scope of life and things, it's just not important. And really when you're brought to the brink of death and back, and you really, nothing at that moment matters except you and your mom laying in bed, you know, it's just time slows down and you just realize that this is what it's all about.
Pretty much to live in the present moment, because we always tend to think about tomorrow, or we always tend to dwell about yesterday, but we seem to forget that the most important thing that we have is now.
And that's the only thing we'll ever have is now.
You know, there's this quote from Melinda's book that I would love to read right now.
Sure.
It says, actually, with cancer, the end of the day is a goal, and waking up in the morning is a victory. You literally take it, not day by day, but minute by minute, second by second. All time is slowed to a ridiculous pace, and it gives you a new insight into life and your values.
Very much so. How true it is. Melinda, if you have to thank your mom for one thing, what would it be?
I would say for not giving up on me, and I know that sounds a little strange, but especially during my eating disorder, I really thought, I knew how difficult it was for my whole family, and I kind of almost expected them to just go, okay, this is too hard, I'm sorry, we can't do this anymore, we can't help you anymore, and my mom was really the only one who didn't give up on me, and she was determined to get me well. And I can never, there aren't words to thank her for that.
Tell us a little bit more about the eating disorder. How did that come about?
Well, it came about initially, people going through cancer know the struggles with food and eating and how nothing tastes good, and you're basically puking your brains out during chemo, and you just, there's bad associations with food. And I had lots of drug reactions, and they resulted in lots of digestive problems. And that, so that was a physical detraction to food, but at the same time I started to develop an emotional and spiritual and mental detraction from food. And gradually that became more and more until it became almost a fear. And an obsession, and it was a very, very scary, dark time. And it was almost like, and people who have eating disorders know what I'm talking about, it's like an addiction. But you know you have to stop, and you know you need to stop, but you just can't find the strength to.
Okay. I'm glad you shared that with a lot of people, because I think sometimes people don't understand how things evolve, and you're right, because you did not actually acquire that eating disorder from living a normal life. Something triggered that within you based on what you went through. So that's quite interesting. Lee, how about you? If you have to thank your daughter for one thing, what would it be?
Okay, you're making me cry now. I want to thank her for fighting. I can't thank her enough for fighting, because I saw from the outside, not from the inside, just from the outside, how difficult it was. And she fought and she fought and she fought. And I am just so thankful to have her here. I can't thank her enough. She brings me joy every day. And I love having her here in my life. And I thank her for fighting.
And
so that I could be with her.
What people don't understand is that we take unconditional love for granted, or just for this matter, love in itself, and we don't realize it until something major happens, or it tests our faith, I guess, in some ways, and then we come running towards, whether it's to God or to our mom or to whoever we have that wonderful, unique connection with, and that's when we realize, like, wow, then we start living our life in the now. And I think that's what has happened here. I mean, no one wants to go through life the way you guys did, but it happened to you guys, so that's understandable. And so I think that's the uniqueness that sometimes people don't realize, that every one of us, it doesn't mean that we have to walk in the same shoes, but we all have the same opportunity to feel and to express the unconditional love for the people around us and whoever that may be seeking that. Well, where can someone buy your book and keep up with your latest happening, Melinda?
Happycoil.net is where you can go for purchase information. It has a bunch of links to Borders and Amazon and more. And so, again, that's happycoil.net. And then booktour.com is where it has all my speaking engagements on there, and book signings and events that I'm going to be at.
And I want to tell everybody, too, this is quite fascinating, because you're only 15 years old. So people may not realize that. I mean, for you to be able to have accomplished so much in such a short period of time, it's totally amazing. What can we expect from you for the second half of this year and beyond?
Well, on October 1st, second edition of Grace comes out, and we're very, very excited about that. I have lots of speaking engagements piling up for cancer support groups and community events and things like that. CHW, Catholic Healthcare West, has great support groups. I'm going to be speaking at three of them. So I'm very excited about that, be able to share with people who, quote, understand. And as far as beyond, my dream is going to Stanford after I graduate. I'm going to be a junior this fall in high school. And I'm really hoping to go to Stanford for medicine. I definitely want to do something in the medical field and keep writing. And I've always loved dancing, and so I'm going to continue dancing and speaking. And hopefully, I just want to help and inspire others, and I'm going to keep working towards that.
Very good. And how about you, Lee?
Oh, good question.
She'll be with me.
I have a feeling that I might be Melinda's people.
Okay.
I think she's going to need people, so I think I'm going to be her people.
Okay.
She's an awesome people.
Okay. The how about the rest of the family? Are they excited about what's going on right now?
Yes, they're very excited. Her brothers are so supportive, and her dad, and her grandparents. Her grandparents just went and spent the weekend with her at Relay for Life this past weekend. They've just been, we have a wonderfully supportive family.
Very interesting. Well, I've always felt like we're all born for a reason. And, you know, some of us take a long time to find out what the reason is. But obviously, even in my situation, and even in your situation, certainly in your situation, when we look at things, I look at it as the life that's chosen us to do certain things, to make a positive difference in someone else's life. And I thought that what you guys are doing is just fantastic. And of course, you cannot be an expert at what you guys are doing unless you experience it yourself. And so in this case, you guys did, so that makes a big difference. Now, we're coming close to the end of the show, and do you ladies have recipes for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
I definitely have a recipe for living.
Okay.
And there's a couple things in the mix, and one, and it's right at the core, is be grateful. And I feel like people search for, like, the secret to happiness and all of this stuff, but really gratitude is really at the basis of happiness, because if you think about a time when you were happy, you were grateful for something, no matter what it was. And I really think that that is key in living. And another thing is giving, and people don't realize the importance of giving in life. You can give smiles, hugs, you can give whatever talent you have, whatever you can bring into people's lives to make it better.
Very good. I like that. Lee?
Well, I Melinda and I are so much alike. I feel like it's, you know, you need to give every speck of love you have inside of you away. You need to find every speck you have, and you need to just give it away. Find somewhere to give it.
And give it because you want to give it, and not because you're expecting something
right.
in return.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it gives you a fulfillment inside.
Yeah, and everyone has something special inside them to give, and something unique.
Okay, very good. I mean, that's very, very true. What do you guys expect from people, a take-home value from reading your book?
I think that everyone's going to take something different out of my book, and I think that's the really cool part about my book, is you don't have to, excuse me, get the same message from my book. Whatever you're going through in your own personal life, you can take something away from my book and you can apply it to your own life to make it better, or apply it to your spirit and help you heal whatever is going on in your life. You can hopefully find help through my book.
Have you got any comments on from readers, just the general John Q. public, about what you've done?
Yes. I it's hard to describe how people react to reading Melinda's book. A lot of times people will open their mouth to talk and then they can't find the words and they just have tears that come out. And I think it's because, well, I know it's because it takes your heart on an emotional journey. People laugh and cry throughout the entire book because it is Melinda's heart. And when you read somebody's heart, about somebody's heart and the journey you go through, you connect and it just takes you on a ride. And one of the things I know that both Melinda and I really hope for the book is that people who have gone through cancer, that they recognize that after they're done with treatments, that they are just as vulnerable as before, and they need to be healed. Their spirit needs to be healed, and their emotions need to be healed. And I think that's not something to be ashamed of. I think it's something that people need to recognize. And I know that survivors have contacted us and thanked Melinda for sharing that and being so honest and open about that, because then they can go and heal themselves as well in that way.
Right, because there is a recovery period for everything, and people don't realize that, because it's sort of like, a cool-down period. You ramp up for the race. You run in the race, and then there's a cool-down period, because you just can't completely come to a stop.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't work that way, correct?
And no, it doesn't, and you're not magically all well and feeling wonderful when treatment ends either, and that can be depressing. Yeah,
you feel like an open wound where any little thing, it you're very vulnerable and open to being hurt physically and emotionally. And really, it's an important, vital time in the health for the rest of your life.
How is your friends been taking this whole situation?
Well, it's funny because some people deal with it in their own unique way, and some people shy away, and some people they just take it different ways, and some people, you know, get in the boat and they're right there to support you, and others they really don't know what to do because I think they're going through their own grieving, and really, if they could tell you what they were feeling, they would be right there with you, but I think it's too painful for them.
Yeah.
And so I think you just need to respect different people's feelings.
That's a good way of looking at it, because I'll be the first one to tell you, because what do you say? How do you do? What do you react? I used to have big problems in situations, not necessarily in this situation, but situations that requires, it's like they need to print a book out there to help you to address certain issues. You know what I'm talking about? When you go and then you're like, well, what do you say? How do you react? And it's very, very difficult. And sometimes being there is more important than what you exactly say, because you're there because you want to be there. And of course, there are people that just, you know, have tons of things to say too. And the people that bad, like I don't have anything to say. I'm emotionless, you know, something like that, you know, and it's not true. But just finding the right words sometimes is going to be very, very difficult. And so I can certainly relate to those people. I think it's just very difficult. I can certainly understand that.
Yeah, even hearing just, you know, I don't have the words to say, but, you know, even that's a great thing, because sometimes you don't have the words, and it's okay to say, I don't have the words, but I care, you know.
That's correct. It's very, very true. Well, thank you very much for the wonderful, great recipes for living and spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Elaine Hall, author of Now I See the Moon, A Mother, A Son, A Miracle. When her son Neil was diagnosed with autism, former Hollywood acting coach Elaine Hall, aka Coach E, took matters into her own hands and used her resources to guide him toward an increasingly independent life. In the process, she founded the Miracle Project, a groundbreaking organization that uses performing arts to connect with children with autism. She was also a subject of an Emmy Award-winning documentary, Autism the Musical. Elaine and I will be discussing a story of hope, faith, and miracles, a story only a mother could tell. For additional information about this show, for future shows, and for my recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com, and you can also follow me at Twitter at Twitter FMMK Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. Melinda and Lee, thank you again and have a great day.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.